Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
That was a big series. We heard the chatter. We understand the schedule. You can't do anything about the schedule except to go out there and play it to the best of your ability. And we did that this series. Very solid team on the other side. We took 2 out of 3, took the series. We went 6-1 on the homestand. I don't think you can ask for a better homestand than that. So off day tomorrow, we'll regroup, and let's start all over.
Unfortunate that we fell short today, but we were on an 8-game win streak. It was really special, and to come off that, and we just came off a loss in, I think it was Pittsburgh, and we haven't lost since Pittsburgh. So I mean, that's pretty damn good. So I think that regardless of today, I mean, we have a ton of momentum going into this road trip, and I'm excited. I'm really excited, and I just need to turn the page and get better and come ready to play in Atlanta.
Mets are amazing, 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 amazing.
There's a fly ball hit out to the left. Waiting is Jones. The Mets are the world champion.
Here's the 1-2 pitch. Check him out. Seaver has 19 strikeouts.
Swung on, hit on the ground towards first.
Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run. Mike Piazza. And the Mets lead 3-2.
To left field. Floyd. And after running roughshod over the National League, the Mets have a title to show for it. 2006 National League East champions.
Here's the payoff pitch from Familia to Fowler on the way. And it's in there. Strike 3 called. The Mets win the pennant. The New York Mets have won the National League pennant. Put it in the books.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, August the 11th, 2019. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. Welcome to another edition of the podcast. Coming at you fast and furious the last couple of weeks as the Mets, between the trade deadline and this great wild card run that we're currently experiencing. And what a wild, fun, and probably the most entertaining regular season games that the Mets have played maybe in 3 or 4 years. What we just saw at Citi Field the last 3 days between the Mets and the Nationals. Joining us in just a little bit, who is there live for all 3 games, a good friend who we always like to go to when we want to get some in-clubhouse perspective. It's our friend from 98.7 ESPN, Rich Catino. He'll join me in just a little bit as we recap this series and the homestand and the road trip that is coming up in Atlanta and Kansas City. And despite the fact that I'm sure all of you, as you listen to this podcast, are disappointed and frustrated and maybe ready to talk a little bit about Edwin Diaz, which we will get into, I think it's important to start out first by saying what a fantastic job the fans did at Citi Field this weekend, making it, and even Steven Strasburg brought this up on Friday, making it an incredible home field advantage for a baseball game. I mean, baseball obviously has the best home field advantage that you have in any sport because the bottom of the ninth. But it sometimes doesn't really matter because it's a sport that's so much about individual performance, and the crowd could play into it, but I'm not sure, with the exception of maybe some moments in the postseason, and even then, if you execute and you really block out all that, in a lot of ways, a professional player, similar to tennis, they block a lot of this stuff out. So it's not like the NBA with the energy and maybe the physicality of the game, or the NFL with the physicality of the game, some of that amps you up and gets you into it. I mean, the NBA is probably the ultimate home court advantage, home field advantage. And I mean, even sometimes that's been changing over the last few years in the playoffs and what have you. But what Mets fans did this weekend, they truly showed that they were a 10th man on the field. And you heard that video that was going viral over Twitter on Saturday, how pumped the fans were on Friday. Probably one of the best regular season games, like I said, we've seen certainly all year, maybe in the last 2 or 3 years. And then again Saturday, I mean, a loud crowd for August. And I have to say, I've been critical of the fan base for some of the whininess and the negativity. And I've been to plenty of Mets games where when you go into the ballpark, it almost, you feel like the fans are ready to lose. And I do believe negative energy can sometimes have an impact on the team. And I know there's some of you in the audience that are probably going, what? What is he saying? Has he lost his mind? But yes, I mean, you probably have been to some games, whether it be at Shea or Citi Field, where the bad energy, the bad karma, the nervous energy, really, you could probably point to as, you know, something that played into, you know, the team losing. I remember down in 07 and 08, some of those late September games, I mean, the crowd was just not into it. After 06, it was almost like 06 was so deflating that the fans changed so much and really didn't recover and come back until 2015. And then the last couple of years, they've been dormant. And maybe even earlier this season, dormant, outside of opening day or maybe the first, you know, homestand of the season. It's almost like they've been waiting to see, well, should we emotionally invest? And I think that's the thing about Mets fans. They don't, they love their team. They're loyal. They'll be negative beyond belief, but they want to emotionally invest at a high level. And whatever reason, maybe it was the way the doubleheader went down, the minute they got that last out of the second game against the Marlins and they went above 500, it's almost like a switch went on and the fans were like, no, now this is real. And I know we've been talking about a wild card race even before then. I mean, how they played in Chicago and Pittsburgh, but it was almost like that doubleheader was the bell that went off. And then you saw as the week went on, even in the games against the Marlins, even the day game, the business person special, the old business person special, they call it, the place was loud. The fans were into it. And then Friday really topped the cake. And yesterday was incredible. And even today, I mean, if Ramos's ball is a couple of inches above Parra's head and the Mets, you know, get a couple of runs, and maybe if that bad call, strike three on J.D. Davis doesn't happen, maybe we're talking about something completely different. But I think it's important how good you guys did. And I've been one of the biggest, and I get torched sometimes on Twitter about being critical about Mets fans. It's almost like you could criticize anybody, GM, front office, players, media. But once you criticize the fans, fans are like, oh, no, you can't criticize me. I'm long-suffering. So I'm here to say that you guys did an outstanding job. The Mets have more home games, significantly more home games than road games the rest of the year. They're going to need more of that. And for an opposition, for an opposing player, for the opposition, Steven Strasburg, to point out about the fans and say, well, DC fans should be like that, it just shows you that it's being noticed by the players. And, you know, this is something that's going to be a huge advantage in the Mets column as you go down the stretch. So bad loss today in the sense where, you know, it's a game that you really would have liked to, you know, put a stamp on the week. As you heard Mickey Callaway say, though, the homestand was fantastic, 6-1. So this loss notwithstanding, it doesn't ruin the week. It doesn't ruin the weekend. The Mets accomplished what they were set out to do. I had them, you know, basically going to go 5-2, and that would have put them in a nice spot going into the road trip. They did one better. And now you got to see how tough this team is. They went on a 7-game winning streak. They lost a game in Pittsburgh that Friday night, a game that they just did not play well, a game that they led. Maybe a game they maybe should have won. And then they came back, and like I said in prior podcasts, they won a game on Saturday that they never would have won earlier in the year, and they started that into a winning streak and won another game, if you really think about it, the second game of the doubleheader that they would not have won earlier in the year. A couple of come-from-behind wins against the Nats, and these are two teams that are so evenly matched that I think a five-game, and it won't happen, it won't be a five-game series, but a five-game series or a seven-game series between these two teams might be a classic series. And anybody who thinks that the Nats were wrong for not signing Bryce Harper, the Nats are as good offensively without Bryce Harper and maybe better with Soto. And I haven't heard anything at this point about his injury, so maybe we'll get an update at some point in the podcast because that's a big, you know, blow if he's out any extended period of time. But, you know, to give Harper 13 years, and yeah, I know that he'd probably be better fit in right field than Adam Eaton at times, but to dedicate those years and potentially lose Rendon, who I think is a better player than Harper as well, in free agency, because I don't know if the Nats could have afforded both. Bryce Harper turning down the Nats, if it's true, $300 million offer, was probably the luckiest thing that happened to the Nats in the last couple of years, and a team that's been a little snake bitten in the postseason, that might be the luckiest break that they've had, and they might be a better team for it. And, you know, I remember all the complaining about the Mets and not them not going after Bryce Harper. Well, Michael Conforto's just as good as Bryce Harper right now, this version of Bryce Harper. If you get the 2015 MVP Harper, different story. He's better than both of those players, but it's been a long time since you saw that version of Harper. So that really stood out to me throughout the weekend. Also, you know, a couple of quick things here. The way the Mets are building their roster, bringing in guys like Joe Panik and Brad Brock, guys who are local, Freehold, New Jersey for Brock, Panik from Hopewell Junction, St. John's graduate. You look up and down, and because there's such a connection with this team and this city and these fans, and I know you're saying, well, Mike, just, you know, 8 weeks ago they were losing, and it's only because they're winning, and I understand that, but even when they were losing, this team throughout the year, and I kept saying this, they weren't far off. They were losing a lot of tough games, gut-punching games. And I think there might be a certain level of toughness that came from losing those games. And the margin of error, which went from nothing to now a little bit of breathing room, not much, a little bit of breathing room, could only make this team stronger. And then I look at the roster, the 25-man roster, and if you count players that came up through the Mets system, through the minor leagues, and then players who have some sort of New York connection, i.e. Marcus Stroman from Medford, Long Island, or Brock from New Jersey, or Frazier from Toms River, you know, guys like that, Panik in St. John's. 17 of the 25 guys on this roster either are grown through the Mets organization or come from this area and have a very good understanding of what this team and this city is all about. And I have to think that that's going to matter. And I know that's not statistically driven. I know that's completely anecdotal. And I know that there's some that think I'm completely crazy for bringing that up. But I really think that that matters a lot. And I'll tell you, the manager, Mickey Callaway, who has been criticized mightily over the last couple of years, rightfully so. And again, he doesn't make the best moves all the time from a bullpen management standpoint, but nothing egregious. And he completely has foobarred some of his communication with the media. But I was reading Steve Serbi's article in the New York Post with J.D. Davis, who has turned into, at least since June 4th, an elite offensive player, one of the four top offensive players in the National League, out of the top 10, 15 players in the National League. He brought up about how Callaway really the players like him and they trust him and they want to win for him. And who knows? I mean, there's a lot of baseball left to play and we'll see. And there's a lot of time for this to go bad or for Mickey to potentially ruin whatever goodwill he has built up. But I really think that, you know, I'm starting to see that maybe Mickey Callaway has some good qualities. And maybe now we've been through a year and a half of garbage. You know, maybe now things are starting to come together. And that's really good to see. But that's why going on to this road trip, I feel there's a toughness. You heard Pete Alonso in the open. They're going to try to move on. Next man up. You've heard them tweet it. You've seen them tweet it. You've heard them talk about it. And now they go into Atlanta, a tough place to play, a plucky team, albeit a team that's had some bullpen issues, a team that is missing a couple of offensive pieces. So maybe they're not quite as plucky offensively as they were the last couple of times the Mets have faced them. And then you go to Kansas City, a bad team, but you're in their ballpark, and it's a weekend series. And these bad teams, you know what, a bounce here, a bounce there, a bad starting outing, and away you go. You could have yourself a ball game. These are big league clubs. You can't take any of them for granted. The recipe remains the same. Like I said the last podcast during the Marlins series, Mets got to get 7 innings from their starter. They got to navigate those last 6 outs from the bullpen. You did not get the 7 innings. DeGrom, you know, basically this game was lost probably on that throw in the first inning, because if DeGrom makes that play and the Mets jump out to a 3-0 lead, you know, you probably get another inning out of DeGrom and the bullpen set up completely differently. And who knows how this goes. You know, you don't have a crystal ball, but you have to feel that play in the first inning when DeGrom dropped the ball, even though that I believe that turned out to be an error on Alonso. That was really an error on DeGrom. Tough play, but a play that should have been made. Now, you're probably saying, well, Mike, you know, who knows with the way Edwin Diaz is pitching, and I understand that. And you'll hear from Mickey after the break, and Mickey's not going to be doing anything drastic to take Diaz out of these high-leverage situations. But he's got to be careful here because nothing can ruin a team's mojo and good karma than bullpen implosions. And that's been the issue that this team has had all year. That's why this team is not better right now than what it should be. I mean, really, with some decent average bullpen work like they've been getting over the last 2 weeks or maybe a little bit longer since the All-Star break, this team might be in first place in the National League East, and we're having a completely different conversation about this series in Atlanta. I think at this point, it's going to be interesting to see how he handles the bullpen. Lugo, again, my issue with Lugo is not that he's not an elite reliever. He is. You have to be very careful with his utilization. He has a partially torn ligament in his elbow that could go at any time. I don't know if that's why they're using him the way they're using him, or is he the kind of guy that, you know, really gives it all out? And I don't remember him being this way last year. I remember them being able to go to him more consistently, but maybe they learned something or he communicated something about his body where he, you know, to be at his peak, he needs a little bit of rest. It looks like back-to-back is a problem. At the very least, back-to-back after 2 innings is a problem. So this makes Mickey Callaway's job even that much harder with the bullpen. And then with Diaz, you know, how do you rebuild this guy? He hasn't been able to command, and I keep going back to, I talked to a buddy who's a scout who knows Diaz very well, and he's like, look, this guy, when his mechanics are off, it takes him some time to get it back. Well, here we are, middle of August, he hasn't gotten it back. He's shown flashes, and maybe he falls in love with that slider a little too much. Maybe that's part of it. And we saw Phil Regan talking to him in the dugout after he gave up the home run to Robles. But the Mets need this guy, and Callaway's going to continue to go to him. Now, what I would do, you know, Familia's a little bit better now. Familia's hot. You know, he talked about how he worked with Ricky Bonas, and maybe he's getting his arm slot back to where it needs to be. Seems like he got out of whack. The mechanics all over the place here with these guys in the bullpen. You know, maybe this is a chance where you move Familia up a little bit and you move Diaz down. Maybe Diaz needs, like, a 7th inning in a game where they're up 2 or 3 runs where psychologically he's not going to do a ton of damage because you could yank him right then and there. And even if he gives up a run, there's still plenty of baseball left. Maybe he needs something like that. I mean, look, they've demoted Familia to the point where he was in 5th, 6th inning work at certain times. You know, I know they want to be careful with him. And I said on the last podcast, you need to be careful with this guy because you could tell that there's some sensitivity to him. And I guess the real question is, and we haven't got an answer, and we won't get that from Callaway or anybody with the team, at least publicly or on the record, Is he built for the pennant race? Is he built for New York? And we'll find out, because a bad Edwin Diaz makes this extremely hard. Look, we talked about Mets math. It was 31 wins as of Thursday before the weekend began. They got two wins. They're down to 29. I believe 90 wins is what this team needs to shoot for to guarantee that they're going to be in the postseason for a play-in game. And that's not going to be an easy task. It's not going to be an easy task at all. Now, realistically, you know, that's going to take 29 wins. It's going to take them only losing 15 times. And they got some tough series at home. And they got some tough series on the road coming up. And even with the 10th man, you, the fans, with the home field advantage, teams like the Dodgers and the Cubs, they're not going to be easy when they come to town. So they're going to need Diaz. And even with that 7 innings of work from the starting rotation, 6 outs is still a ton of outs to get against some of these teams. And even on a good day, you know, there are some guys in this Mets bullpen that are long ball prone. There are guys in this Mets bullpen that are, you know, potentially, you know, guys who walk the ballpark. So ultimately, they're going to need Edwin Diaz. So I'm going to trust Mickey Callaway. They committed to him back when they could have fired him, back when they could have just, you know, given up on him and put someone like Riggleman or maybe Louis Rojas, something to spark the team and maybe get an interim. They went with him. That was the right move. He believes keeping Diaz in high-leverage situations is the right thing. He might fall on his sword with this. And look, they traded their best prospect for a guy they thought was the best closer in the game. And he clearly has outstanding stuff, even in a bad year. The strikeout rate is tremendous. There's something just a little bit off, and I don't know if it's mechanics. I don't know if it's New York. I don't know if it's confidence. I don't know if it's a combination of all three. But we're going to find out, because we're in the deep end of the pool. And the Mets are going to need Edwin Diaz. And they've had so many gut-wrenching, gut-punching losses to date. They just can't afford too many more, especially as we get into the nitty-gritty, as the calendar is about to turn in a couple of weeks to September. That's when those gut-punching losses that you feel in May and June and in July, but you really feel it in late August, and you really feel it in September. So I guess we'll see. We're going to talk about this and more as our buddy Rich Catino, 98.7 ESPN, at Catino9 on Twitter, will join me in just a couple of minutes. We'll get his take. He was there at Citi Field talking to the players. He heard the crowd. He heard the great job you guys did. Let's see what he thinks about that and some of the other topics that I brought up here in the opening. So let's take a quick break. When we return, Rich Catino, ESPN 98.7, will join me. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this.
The way we're set up, that we really can't afford to do that. So you know, he's going to continue to get big outs for us, continue to pitch in big games. And like we did last night, we'll pick our spots and do the best we can to win a game every single night. The way we're...
We're back. And joining us, Rich Catino, 98.7 ESPN, at Catino9 on Twitter. And who better to give us the perspective from Citi Field? He was there this weekend, probably three of the best ball games, like I said, in the open that we've had in a couple of years. And a great way to end the homestand, and away you go. And Rich, I start out with this, and I want to get your take. I said in the open, the first thing I said is that the Mets beat the Nationals on this homestand at 2 out of 3. They were 6-1 on the homestand. But to me, the big story is the Mets fans. And I don't often go into that because they could be tough to take sometimes. Mets fans are emotional. Sometimes they get a little crazy. But they created such an atmosphere at Citi Field. You could hear it on TV. You were there. Steven Strasburg even commented on it. They were truly the 10th man. And I think they had a lot to do with the success of this team. And it seems since the doubleheader sweep that the fans have kicked it into another level. And hopefully this is something that we'll see throughout the rest of the season and into potentially the playoffs.
I do, and I think it all started in that doubleheader with the Marlins when, in the nightcap, the Mets had that home run barrage to give them a win. And it really took place the entire weekend. And it wasn't just when the Mets were batting or the Mets were rallying. It was from the first pitch of the game. It was booing umpires' calls on a ball or a strike that was a borderline call that didn't go the Mets' way. It was booing, throwing over too many times to check Met base runners from Nationals pitchers. It was a bunch of things, and it was great to see because I think that, you know, it's the first time we've seen that since 2016 in the late stages of that season when the Mets were battling to get that home field and the wild card. And I think that it was great to see. It would have been nice if the Mets would have, you know, for their fans, given them a sweep today. It wasn't in the cards, but I do think that this is a team that not only has the Met fans' eyes, but I think has the baseball world's eyes looking at them in terms of how they turn this around, and they're in a race now for that wild card. There's no question about it.
Rich Catino, 98.7 ESPN, joining us. He's given us the perspective. He was there at Citi Field all weekend, one of the best in the business over there, loves to come by and chat with us as we try to bridge the gap between the media and the fans here on the program. Rich, this team has a connection, and you could see it with the fans. We saw it in 2015, but I have to tell you, it seems a little bit different this year, whether it be Dom Smith there turning around throughout the game, trying to get the fans going. You know, Michael Conforto, I know that it's cliche, but he, you know, seemed to really want to credit the fans after the walk-off hit on Friday. And I'm thinking about it, and I'm saying to myself, why is that? Why is this team? And then I did something, I broke down something mathematically, and I'm curious your thoughts on it. 17 of the 25 players on this roster either came up through the Mets system or are from the area, like Todd Frazier from Toms River or Marcus Stroman from Medford. Now you have Brad Brock and Joe Panik, who are local guys, whether it be from Hopewell Junction with Panik or New Jersey, Freehold, New Jersey with Brock. And I think that makes a difference. Growing up through the organization, you bleed orange and blue. This is your hometown team, even if you're from somewhere else. You're an import, but you're from the area. You get it. You get what this is all about. And I don't know if that was purposely done with the Brock and Panik moves by Brody Van Wagenen, but I have to think that plays into it, and I have to think that that gives the Mets, as much as the stat guys are going to go crazy when I say this, it's going to give the Mets somewhat of an advantage as we go down the stretch.
No question, and I put Stroman on that list too as well. And, you know, I think that, you know, you have to be a New Yorker to understand how sports are viewed in New York, and they're viewed differently than in any other marketplace in the country. And when you've grown up here, you understand that. And if you've grown up in the Met organization, you understand it too. And the other thing I think that is kind of similar to the 16 team is you have players fighting for positions, fighting, you know, for playing time on this team. Yet the guy they're fighting with, they're supporting. And I think the best example of that I have all year since spring training is Pete Alonso and Dominic Smith, who, you know, both of them were first basemen. Now Dominic had to learn another position, but each of them supported each other. And that speaks not only to those two individuals, it speaks to the setting that Mickey Callaway and the coaching staff and Brody Van Wagenen have put together at Citi Field. And I think that it's going to help them down the stretch as well. Just like in 2015, Michael Conforto was taking playing time away from Michael Kadire, but Kadire helped him on every turn. Wilmer Flores, you know, was battling for playing time with a bunch of different positions on the team. David Wright helped him, and Ruben Tejada helped him, and a bunch of other people helped him. So I see a lot of similarities with that. And the other similarity I see with this team is, much like the 15 and 16 team did for Terry Collins, they will go through a wall for Mickey Callaway. And I think that cannot be understated either. Phil Regan's import into this pitching staff, they're throwing a lot more first pitch strikes, but they're also spending a lot more time planning and game planning for individual games rather than the concept of their entire talent base. And I think that that's another thing that the Mets put together during the season, and I think it's worked out very well. And we haven't seen an improvement yet really in Diaz, but we're starting to see a little bit from Familia, and I think it's a lot of what they've been working on with him from a pitching coach perspective. I expect Familia to have a good end to the season because I think he's really working hard at tweaking some things that needed tweaking.
And you know what? Again, I know it's going to be one of those things that comes down to the wire at the end of the year, and it could be as much politics as anything. But Mickey Callaway, who I said, if you don't have a long-term replacement, you can't fire him this year. You give him the year. And guess what?
we're giving him the year, and you're starting to see some things that you may like. And J.D. Davis did an interview with Steve Serby of the New York Post earlier today, and there's a couple of interesting nuggets in it. And one of them was about Mickey, and Serby asked him, what do the guys think about Mickey? And they talk about how they love him, and I think guys absolutely love playing for him. He's got great energy. I haven't heard or felt any disconnection with him or anything like that, or guys getting pissed off at him. I don't know if anybody would answer that question negatively, but I can tell you this, Rich, and you're around the players a lot. If they don't like somebody, they may give him a tepid vote of endorsement, but they don't get into kind of what I think J.D. Davis did in that answer to Steve Serby of the Post.
No question. And if you want to talk to someone that really understands the value of Mickey Callaway, talk to Dominic Smith. Dominic Smith is a guy that you know, didn't have playing time. He had a great spring training, and Mickey said, make it hard on me to make this decision. He ended up playing some outfield. He ended up having a good season. He ended up getting hurt, which kind of curtailed everything that he was accomplishing this year. But that's an example of a player who didn't have a spot on the roster that Mickey said, work hard and I'll find room for you, and he did. And I think that only speaks volumes in Dominic Smith's mind, but other players see that, Mike, and they look at it and they say, I'm going to be, you know, playing time is going to be given to me and I'm going to earn it, but I think I can go out there and get big spots on this team. He's done it with Luis Avalon. He's done it with Justin Wilson. He's done it with J.D. Davis. And that's something that I definitely saw Terry Collins do in his tenure, and I'm seeing that Mickey Callaway does it. And when you talk to players that are fighting for playing time, they all tell you that Mickey's honest with them, and he rewards them if they play well. And I think that's something that permeates through that clubhouse, as knowing that you have to earn your playing time, but you can earn your playing time at the same time. And I think it's a very important message to players.
And he talks about the team with not only the talent, but the camaraderie. This is what J.D. Davis said to Serby, how they go out to eat with each other, if it's on the road or at home. They care about playing the game the right way. And look, it's easy to say all these things when they're on this streak that ended today, 15-16, and what are they, 20-7 since the All-Star break. But they were playing pretty well at times. They were losing in different small ways. And you felt, and I think you've been one that has said it, you know, if they could just get that gear going. This isn't a bad team. We've both been saying it. And I always hear Keith Hernandez on the broadcast talk about how, and it was more with the 06 team, I remember, how that was a team that, you know, really was tight-knit. They talked baseball. They had got veterans like Julio Franco in there, Carlos Delgado, Paul LaDuca, you know, so on and so forth, Tom Glavine, Pedro. And I remember him always talking about how he felt that that was a difference maker. And when you're in a wild card race with Milwaukee and St. Louis and Washington and Philadelphia, statistically there's so many ways you can break these teams down, but they're pretty much all the same. They have warts in certain areas and strengths in others. So what I think is this sustainable? Can the Mets take after this loss and go on the road and be sustainable? And these are the kind of little things that I'm looking at as being the difference maker. I know this, again, it could be corny, and maybe a week from now it doesn't matter if they go on the road and play poorly, but I feel like they've turned a corner, and I think these are small things that are part of it.
Well, and think about what went on this weekend. The Mets had three starting pitchers take the mound, and I don't think any one of the three of them had their best stuff, had their best pitching going for them. Yet the Mets found a way to win two games, and today they were right within striking distance of the game because they pick each other up. Because when the starting pitcher isn't good enough, then maybe someone in the bullpen comes in and does the job. Maybe the Mets do more hitting. When the hitting is having trouble with another pitcher, the starting pitcher gives them seven innings, two runs or less. And I think that, you know, the best way I can describe it is that, much unlike Odell Beckham of the Giants, everyone in that room is concerned most about the W column more than their individual accolades. And I could say that about just about everyone in that room. And that's the thing that winning teams do. I mean, and winning businesses do. I always talk about, you know, you have to care about your teammates as much as you do about yourself. Nobody cares more about their teammates than themselves. No one's that selfless. But the people that care, that want their teammates or their colleagues in a business setting to succeed, they're the businesses that, and they're the teams that win. There's no secret. It's a it's a camaraderie that is there, because the bottom line is, at the end of the day, do we get a W or an L? And I can tell you this, that there are players in that room that would rather go 0 for 3 and get a win than go 2 for 5 with 5 RBIs and get a loss. And I can say that about just about everyone in that room. And I think that they've put together people that understand that. The coaches and Mickey Callaway have taken that, and they brought that aspect in the first meeting they had with spring training. They talked about that directly, the first thing. And Pete Alonso talks to me about that meeting and McNeil all the time about how playing time would be rewarded. We're all in this together, and we don't cast aspersions on each other. We support each other. And the equation is, let's get as many wins as we can. And I think finally after the All-Star break, Mike, it was starting to come that way, but in terms of the wins. But I think that feeling of togetherness was always there, even when they were losing.
And Rich Catino's with us, 98.7 ESPN. And here's about the offense, and I keep going back to J.D. Davis here, mainly because he was such a big part of the weekend. But I'm throwing him now into the equation. He's playing, you know, not a great left field, but he's passable out there. And they needed that with Dom Smith out, who was, you know, the guy that many thought would be the everyday left fielder because of how well he was hitting. But offensively, they have four of the top 15 offensive players, if you count J.D. Davis, and you rank them by OPS plus this year. Guys in their prime, J.D. Davis, I mean, early prime for Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil, and Michael Conforto. And if you look across the diamond, you got Juan Soto, had a great series for the Nats, and it looks like he only missed a couple of days with a sprained ankle, so that's good for the Nats. No Bryce Harper in there. No, you know, all these, guys. I mean, I'm even look on here, you know, Manny Machado's not on this list, so everybody was pining for the 10, 12, 13-year contract guys. Maybe the Mets right under their nose have guys that they need. And if J.D. Davis can be an elite hitter playing left field, even if he's not a great defensive player, changes the dynamic of this offense. And it's not just then at that point about the pitching, because that's the foundation. It's about these elite core of young hitters that can really do some damage here for this team. In the absence of Robinson Cano, even bigger than it would have normally been.
And I can throw a fifth hitter in there, Wilson Ramos, who has more RBIs than any other catcher in the major leagues. And the offense, to me, has done what it has to do, and probably done even more than I thought they would do. Defensively, they've improved in the second half. I thought in the first half that they were, at best, a mediocre defensive team. I think they're now an above-average defensive team. I think Rosario has improved his defense. I think whoever they have playing second base is a good partner for Rosario, whether it be McNeil, whether it be, you know, Panic, whoever it is there. I think Frazier's solid defensively at third. I think the outfield, the problem is you got outfielders all playing positions that they're not usually playing. Conforto made a great catch today. I think he's a very athletic player, and I think he'll get better as center fielder as it goes. But you have McNeil playing right. You have J.D. Davis playing left. That, you know, I do think the defense has improved, and I think that's another big reason why they're winning games, because they're not giving teams four or five outs. Now, today is a bad example because in the very first inning, three unearned runs scored, and that got the Mets off to a bad start. But for the most part, the Mets have been scoring first, not the other team scoring first. And I think that's the other thing with their starting pitching. That really puts the pressure on the opposition. Mets have a 1-2-0 lead in the first two, three innings of the game. You're like, oh, my goodness, how am I going to get back in this game with DeGrom on the mound or with Syndergaard on the mound or with Mats or with Wheeler or with Stroman on the mound? And I think that's what's going to put the Mets over the top in this wild card race, that they have a more balanced roster than most teams do, and they have the great starting pitching that can take the bell and run with it on the days when they're not hitting as well or the days that their bullpen isn't fully rested. They can go 7 or 8 innings, and I think that's going to be the difference between the Mets and the other teams in this wild card hunt.
By the way, you can check out Rich on Twitter at Catino9, also his book, Press Box Revolution, and he's got a book about the 69 Mets coming out. I know you guys have heard a lot about the 69 Mets, but that should be coming out, I believe, next spring. Wouldn't be a segment if we didn't do something about the storm clouds, and it's been so good for so long that, I don't think there's been a lot of bad to talk about, but Edwin Diaz was a topic of conversation. Another rough outing, and I'm not even sure It does change, obviously, the dynamic, being down by one run and Doolittle coming in and he not having that cushion might have changed the outcome. But, you know, Diaz has struggled. There are some that even have suggested, can they send him down to the minors, which they can. He does have options. Mickey pretty much poo-pooed that as Diaz being thrown into lower leverage situations. Now, Lugo's been fantastic, even with the Soto home run. I mean, that's just a great player beating you. But he can't go two innings every game, and I don't know if he could go one inning back-to-back. Familia's look better. You know, Wilson is Wilson. Gazelman's Gazelman. These are average guys that if you don't go seven innings with a starter, it becomes a much different game like you saw today. Diaz is the guy that you almost feel like if you don't have something out of him, even if you can't go to him in the sixth, seventh, eighth inning to get some quality outs, you know, it creates a very big problem for this team because you just can't burn Lugo out. Unless Brad Brock is going to all of a sudden discover his 2016 form, they need Diaz. Do you agree with Mickey and what he said in the postgame, which I'm sure that you were there for? Diaz should stay in these high-leverage situations. Do you think maybe he should put him in a seventh or eighth inning like he started to do with Familia and within the course of a very short period of time and build him back up, make Lugo the closer? I think right now Lugo's got to get the ball first before Diaz, but it doesn't sound like that might happen.
It doesn't, and I know what Mickey's going for, but I respectfully disagree with him a little bit. I think Lugo has earned the right to close, and I would try to put Diaz in lower leverage situations. Now, the reason that I think Mickey doesn't want to do that, and I don't agree with it, but it's a reasonable, it's an understandable point of view, is if I take this guy out of the closer role, I may lose him forever, and meaning the rest of the season. I think you anointed him as the closer, and Mickey feels you got to go with him in that. Because the only way you're going to win is if he becomes your closer so that everyone else is in roles that they're good in the bullpen for. Now, it's going to be – if he keeps giving up homers and pitching poorly, it's going to really test how much patience Mickey's going to have. But right now, Mickey has the patience to leave him in those high-leverage situations. I might think about doing something different than that. I may think about not only putting him not in the eighth inning, making Diaz pitch the seventh inning, putting Familia in the eighth and Lugo in the ninth, and just trying it to see if it's something that helps Diaz get back to where he needs to be. I think the problem with Diaz is from the neck above. I don't think it's his stuff. I think that, you know, it is his pitch selection is somewhat a problem. His pitch execution is somewhat a problem. His fastball was electric today, even in the performance he had. He throws that slider and he hangs it too much. He makes it hittable. And it's not always a hanging slider. Sometimes it's one that rolls into the strike zone. And I think he wants to establish that slider as soon as he comes in the game. And I've said this to you a million times. I don't agree with that. Set up the fastball first. Make that late movement fastball first, because then the slider could look like that and have a total other framework in that it goes down in the strike zone, or even it goes or comes across high and then into the strike zone for a called strike. But if you're starting trying to establish the slider, it's kind of like a pitcher throwing a first pitch changeup, Mike. What are you changing up? And I think the mindset, if I was coaching Diaz, I would tell him, I want your first seven pitches of every appearance to be fastballs. Now, I may want to try a four-seamer as opposed to a two-seamer. I may want to try something high in the strike zone as opposed to low executing so that the eye level changes. But I don't want you touching that slider to the eighth pitch of your performance, of your appearance. I just think he wants to establish that slider so much, and it debilitates his performance because, to me, his fastball is still his best pitch.
Yeah, he's a conundrum, and I agree with you. You know, the more you think about it, you know, perhaps this is all about New York and being mental. I know Phil Regan pulled him aside in the dugout after that inning. Guy throws 98, guy's got electric stuff, location, and I don't know if it's the ball or what have you, but I guess we'll find out. And the thing here is this, I feel for the guy because this is critical. If he turns out to be the guy, and they've had so many gut-punching, blown bullpen losses, and they're big bullpen blown losses, and today's not one of those, but bullpen blown losses that happen in late August and September are even worse. I mean, if anybody who watched 2007, 2008, those collapses to the Phillies knows that better than anybody. And you don't want Diaz to be the reason why this team finishes game or two games out of the wild card, because it's something that may never make him recover from his New York career. We don't know if he'll be back next year anyway, even if he pitches well. But, you know, certainly at this time of the year, this is critical. It's a very fine line. And look, Rich, it ultimately could cost Mickey his job. He may be the difference between playoffs, no playoffs, and Mickey's job. I know that that's kind of black and white, and I hate making things like that. But let's face it, you know, eighth inning, ninth inning, Mets ahead, they're going to have leads as we go down the stretch. It's going to come down to those last six outs. These starters should, for the most part, the recipe is starters seven innings. They didn't get it today, but starters seven innings, six outs from the bullpen, and this bullpen can navigate six outs. More than that, it gets tricky, but this bullpen can navigate six outs. So it's going to come down a lot of times to Diaz or Lugo, and Diaz is going to be a big part of this.
No question, and I think it's going to tell a lot about where the Mets finish up. But I think Mickey's thinking, I can't win without Diaz, so I can't bury him in being a mop-up man. I've got to stay with it, and that's what he's doing. And I think to a certain extent, he's doing it with a Familia, and we're starting to see the last few appearances, Familia's been better. Now, whether that's going to hold true for the rest of the season, that's why we play the games. But in Familia today, I saw his slider and his fastball sinking, and those are things that always show me that he's going to have a good performance. And he struck out the side in his one inning today against a good hitting team. So I do think that Mickey looks at that and says, well, if Familia's found his stuff, then why can't Diaz? So I think he's going to stick with Diaz in this situation. And one thing I've learned about Mickey, if it's something he really believes that will work, he doesn't care what the criticism around him is going to be. He's still going to do it. So I don't think the criticism is going to predicate him changing his mind on it as much as it would be as we get towards September, if he really thinks his best chance to get it into a playoff spot is to have a different closer other than Edwin Diaz.
Big road trip coming up, Rich. I know you'll be on 98.7 ESPN. Anything else you got coming up this week? Obviously, you'll be watching the games from afar, and then the Mets will be back for another big homestand the following week. But now it's an nitty-gritty. Can't take a step back. So what do you got coming out over the next week or so?
Well, definitely you're going to be following us. I'm not on this road trip, but then they're coming home for a homestand, I believe, against the Indians, Braves, and Cubs, which, you know, they're all three high-level teams. You know, helps that they're playing the Indians at Citi Field, that the Indians lose a designated hitter out of their lineup, but I do think it will be a tough set. And I don't want to dismiss this Kansas City series this coming weekend, too, because they're going to be up for the Braves, and whether they win the series or not, you don't want them to take a step back and take anything for granted in Kansas City. So I think it's important for them to approach those games with the same fervor that they've been approaching stuff. And I do think that it is important for the Mets to take two out of three in Atlanta because, listen, I think the division, there's seven back in the loss column at this point. I still think that that's a tremendous amount. It might be eight in the loss column. I may have that wrong. I think it is eight in the loss column. And I think that, you know, the division is still a very remote possibility. Sweeping in Atlanta would be great. But you need to take two out of three just so you can keep that as a remote possibility, the division. But you also want to keep winning games. And listen, the winning streak's over. We saw when their last winning streak ended, they went on another streak. I'm not saying that's going to happen again. But I am saying that you have to follow it up with winning series. If you keep winning series, if you can be 4-2 on this road trip, you come home for this big homestand, and you're still staying far away from the 500 mark as much as possible. And one of the things Mickey said all year is he's been on teams when they got to 500, they use that as a springboard to get to 10 over 500 really quickly. It will be nice to see the Mets get to 10 over 500 by the end of the homestand, the tough homestand that they have. If they're there, 10 over 500, by the time they finish that homestand with the three tough teams, then I think they're definitely going to be a playoff team. So that's something to watch for as well.
Rich, as always, appreciate the time. You're always generous with it. We'll catch up again. I know we'll talk before the year is out. Keep up the good work, my friend. Always a good time here.
And great talking to you on your podcast. You have a tremendous amount of loyal listeners, and they're loyal because you're loyal to them, and that says a lot about you too, Mike.
Thanks, Rich. Be well. That's Rich Catino, 98.7 ESPN. Kind words from Rich. I always appreciate that. Look, great opportunity to go 4-2 on this trip with Kansas City. Can't sleep on Kansas City, but if you look at the road trips, and the Mets are going to probably need about 10 or 11 wins, I think, to get to that 90 mark on the road. Four wins this week would go a long way towards achieving that if they could take 4 out of 6 on this road trip, and it would silence a lot of the critics who still feel that the Mets maybe have, and they certainly have benefited from, a softer schedule, but they played one of the better teams in the National League toe-to-toe this weekend and very easily could have swept them with some good defense. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we return, final thoughts. Want to talk about reviews and some of the kind words you guys have given me on the Apple podcast, and just wrap up. And before we roll the credits, give you a thank you. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this.
Video room, looking at Hudson getting ready for my bat, and so I was watching on TV and off the bat, and I just ran into the dugout screaming. So no, it was awesome. Just for him to come through in that at bat, his first home run is absolutely huge. It's been pretty amazing how this team in this run, there's been a lot of guys where the least expected that come through, and just like Louis right now or tonight, it was a huge at bat. You know, it was a pinch hit. I think the count was 3-2 off Rodney, and he just didn't miss, and it was awesome for him to get his first home run in that situation.
All right, final thoughts. Rich Catino, good stuff. Of course, you can check him out all the time on ESPN 98.7 at Catino9 on Twitter. Hey, I just wanted to ask you guys before I roll the credits here that first I want to thank everybody. Tons of reviews have been coming in over the last couple of weeks on Apple Podcasts and some really great stuff. And I just wanted to thank you again for the kind words on Twitter at Mike Silva Media. Really trying to put this podcast up there amongst the, and I don't think there's a ton of Mets podcasts. I know there's more than I even know about. But you know, the ones that matter, the guys with the names, I really think this product, what I'm trying to do here is put it right up against them. And I'm not trying to be a fan or trying to be a homer. I'm just trying to bridge the gap between the fans, the media, having had a little foot in both ends, and have some fun here. So I appreciate everything. If you haven't had a chance to go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review, just as long as it's sincere, I'm not begging for reviews here. It does help the show get visibility when people are searching for it, because this is a big world, the internet. And, you know, anytime you... you try to get some kind of notoriety or visibility, it's hard. There's a lot of messages being thrown at everybody. So if you can do that, I'd greatly appreciate it. Go to TalkinMetsPodcast.com. That'll bring you to the Apple Podcast. That's TalkinMetsPodcast.com. No G. Of course, you could send me a note, Mike Silva at TalkinMetsPodcast.com. I do appreciate that. Of course, I want to thank Rich Catino again for joining us here tonight. I want to thank you for listening. You can check out the show all the time at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the road trip. We'll be back with another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast next Sunday. We'll be wrapping up, hopefully, a big road trip with a lot of Mets wins at that point. Till then, take care, everybody. Enjoy the games.
say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.